The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Fed Chair Jerome Powell dials back expectations on rate cuts.
Right now, given the strength of the labor market and progress on inflation so far, it's appropriate to allow restrictive policy further time to work and let the data and the evolving outlook guide us.
And the International Monetary Fund revises its economic outlook for the global economy. Plus, the Supreme Court hears arguments in a case that could impact hundreds of January 6th prosecutions. It's Tuesday, April 16th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says inflation and hiring have been firmer than expected, introducing new uncertainty over whether the central bank will be able to lower interest rates this year. He spoke during a moderated question and answer session in Washington earlier today.
The recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it's likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence. That said, we think policy is well positioned to handle the risks that we face. If higher inflation does persist, we can maintain the current level of restriction for as long as needed. At the same time, we have significant space to ease should the labor market unexpectedly weaken. Right now, given the strength of the labor market and progress on inflation so far, it's appropriate to allow restrictive policy further time to work and let the data and the evolving outlook guide us. Come what may, we remain strongly committed to returning inflation over time sustainably to 2%.
Powell's comments marked a clear shift in the Fed's outlook after a third consecutive month of stronger-than-anticipated inflation, which appears to have derailed hopes that the central bank might be able to lower interest rates preemptively. Big banks continue to post strong earnings today, highlighting how a resilient economy is powering everything from Main Street to Wall Street. Overall, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley all reported revenue and earnings that beat or met analysts' expectations. As a group, the six big banks reported $35.63 billion in profits, down 3% from a year ago. Combined revenue rose 4% to more than $139 billion. Some other highlights? Consumer spending remained robust, and pent-up demand for deal-making, stock, and bond sales lifted earnings at the Wall Street-heavy banks. The market rally this year also boosted fees banks collect on money they manage for clients. But the results were somewhat tempered by rising pressure from interest rates, which squeezed profit margins. Banks also warned the recovery in capital markets is fragile and that they don't expect much revenue and profit growth this year. Coming up, the International Monetary Fund gives an improved outlook for global economic growth this year. More on the updated forecast after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
The global economy is picking up steam, but the world's poorest countries are falling behind. That's according to the International Monetary Fund's report. Here now with more is economics reporter Paul Kiernan. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's start with why the outlook has improved and for the better.
Yeah, so the IMF has revised up its forecast for 2024 economic growth to 3.2%. The biggest driver of that is the U.S. economy, which, as we know, has been outperforming expectations. I mean, a year ago, everyone thought the U.S. was headed for a pretty sharp slowdown or potentially even a recession at some point. And those expectations have basically been cast aside. The U.S. has withstood higher interest rates and just seems to be kind of going full steam ahead for now.
And other global economies are expanding too.
Yep. Large emerging markets like China, India, Russia, Brazil had their forecasts revised upward. The euro area was revised down a little bit. But the overall panorama is just looking a little bit stronger for this year than we thought, you know, 6 months ago.
So what's the forecast for the next few years?
Well, the IMF thinks the world economy is going to continue growing. They did flag that in the medium term, which they define as 5 years out, global growth is slowing down. You know, 15 years ago, it wasn't uncommon for the global economy to be expanding 4.5% a year or more. By 2030, the IMF thinks that global growth will be just 2.8%.
And why is that? What's accounting for that weaker medium-term outlook?
A few different things. The biggest one is the labor supply, and that's slowing down because all over the world, especially in advanced economies like the US and EU, but also in many emerging markets, the population is aging, people are having fewer babies, and so population growth is slowing. So there's a big demographic effect that accounts for the biggest, if you take the decline in global GDP growth, the biggest chunk of that decline owes to the labor supply. Another issue is governments around the world have more debt. When you have more debt, you're paying more interest and it takes away your ability to invest. And so the IMF sees a little bit less investment happening in the medium term as well.
And another point here, Paul, that we often see, and we see in this forecast as well, is that poorer countries aren't keeping up with the growth of these larger economies like the U.S., for example. What else did the IMF say in that regard?
So this has been a pretty disappointing thing that's happened since the pandemic before 2020. Around the world, lower income countries tended to grow their economies and their standards of living faster than wealthy economies. And so for about 20 years, there was this thing called convergence, where low-income countries are just kind of catching up. They're converging with higher-income countries. Since the pandemic, that's basically stalled for a variety of reasons. One of them is the absolute poorest countries didn't have as much space, capability to do government stimulus to offset the pandemic. But the IMF is sounding the alarm bells. You know, they're not sure that convergence in the next 5 years for the poorest countries is going to resume. And that could have implications for global migration. You know, if you're in a country in sub-Saharan Africa, you look around and you don't see much prospect for economic opportunity, you're much more inclined to try and move to, you know, the U.S. or Europe.
That's Wall Street Journal economics reporter Paul Kiernan. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments today on a case that could affect the prosecution of hundreds of people charged in connection with the January 6th, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol, including former President Donald Trump. At the center of the case is the question of whether federal prosecutors are allowed to charge January 6th rioters with violating an obstruction statute enacted in 2002 in the wake of the Enron financial scandal. Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal legal affairs correspondent Jan Wolf. Jan, how did the justices respond to the arguments presented by both sides today?
I would say that there was plenty of skepticism of the government's view that it could use this law from 2002 to prosecute January 6 rioters. I would not say it's a surefire, you know, outcome that DOJ is going to lose, but that's the more likely outcome based on oral argument. There's always the caveat that arguments are for exploring ideas, and sometimes the actual decision comes out and it's a surprise. The government's position is pretty clear. The joint session of Congress to count the electoral votes was about as official of a proceeding as you can get. And the people entering the building and delaying that for several hours was about as clear of an obstruction as of an official proceeding as you can get. But where things get complicated, and this is what, you know, some defendants in these cases have argued, is that the law was enacted after the Enron accounting scandal, and it's pretty clearly about corporate malfeasance. It's about things like shredding documents so Congress can't investigate them, which is a very different circumstance.
This case has implications regardless of how it's decided, including in special counsel Jack Smith's case brought against Trump for election interference.
So all eyes are on New York right now, where Trump is on trial in one of the four criminal cases he faces. But don't forget that in D.C., the special counsel, Jack Smith, brought a four-count indictment about election interference, about Trump's conduct before and leading up to January 6th. And two of the four counts in that case are premised on this same statute. So this case has potential ripple effects for the Trump case. Now, because it's two of the four, even in this scenario where the Supreme Court rules against the government's view of this law, you would still have two counts remaining. So the case in D.C. against Trump would not go away, but it would be narrowed in that scenario. The Justice Department has used this obstruction law in more than 300 cases stemming from the January 6th attack. And a ruling against the government's view of the statute would have major consequences for these defendants. What we have here is a ruling that has implications for Donald Trump and also for hundreds of alleged participants in the January 6th riot.
That's Wall Street Journal legal affairs correspondent Jan Wolf. House Speaker Mike Johnson has defiantly rejected a new call for him to resign. A second lawmaker, Kentucky Representative Thomas Massie, said this morning that he plans to join Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene on her motion to vacate the speaker chair. Massie's announcement comes a day after Johnson introduced a plan to pass bills funding Ukraine, Israel, and other overseas allies. His move comes amid growing frustration among a large block of Republican conservatives over how Johnson's repeatedly turned to Democrats to help pass legislation to fund the government and other critical bills, like the recent reauthorization of a contentious surveillance bill. And you're starting to plan your summer vacation, but a lot of places are putting new restrictions on tourism. What questions do you have about what that means for the future of travel? Send us a note, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send it to wnpod@wsj.com. That's WNPOD at wsj.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4328. Just be sure to include your name and location because we might use it on the show. And finally, Hollywood is tapping into video games for TV and film productions as audiences grow tired of storylines based on comics. Last year, 7 movie adaptations of video games were released, including Five Nights at Freddy's and Gran Turismo, up from 2 in the previous year, according to Ampere Analysis. And some 19 TV shows based on video games made their debut in 2023. Our reporter Sarah Needleman says Hollywood's seeking feedback from gamers to ensure success.
The studios are paying attention to the kind of feedback they're getting, because they've seen it happen before. When the Sonic movie came out, there were some trailers, and fans of the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise just ripped it apart. They did not like the way the main character looked, and the studio took that feedback and made changes, even though they were pretty far along, because they knew that it wasn't going to go well if they stuck to their guns, and now it's doing quite well. So these Hollywood studios will mine social media like Reddit and Twitch and Discord to get a sense of what people are saying and thinking. And then they'll also do, you know, traditional focus groups too.
And there is one I'm looking forward to, a reported movie adaptation of the video game Stray. It's a recent favorite of mine where you get to play as, yes, a stray cat, making your way through a post-apocalyptic world. It's a heavy game, but it can also be really cute. Curious how that'll translate to the big screen. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Anthony Vancey, with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.